It's here and now, and apparently we missed the big holiday yesterday, National Cheese Lovers Day. But fear not, we will celebrate it now with Isan Gerdal, co-owner of the New York and Boston cheese shop Formaggio Kitchen. Welcome to you.
Nice to be here.
And Kathy Guntz, here and now resident chef, is with us as well. Kathy, great to see you.
Nice to be here.
And we're talking cheese here. Isan, I want to ask you first, when it comes to cheese, you know, we know that there are great cheeses coming from Europe, from France, from Italy, from other places, but also a lot from the U.S.
Absolutely. I think we're very fortunate to be in the Northeast. We're in the hotbed of new cheesemakers, and they're coming up with some amazing stuff that rival the Europeans and surpass it many times.
And I hope that our listeners in Wisconsin don't feel bad when you say that.
No, well, you got to kind of support your own town first. But I brought an amazing cheese from Wisconsin, so.
Well, okay, so tell us what you've got here. What have you brought us?
The first cheese we're going to try clockwise, it's called Brebis Blanche. It's from Shushan, New York.
Now, before we start, when you taste cheese, are there specific things that you should be looking for, or a way that you taste it in your mouth?
Absolutely. There are three stages we look at: the beginning, the middle, and the end. You want the beginning to be very gentle, wake up your palate. The middle is where the money is. Middle should be the long and complex and peaks and valleys, kind of intrigue your palate, wake it up and get it going and show you different complexities of the cheese. And then the goodbye part is the end. It should go away. You should be able to taste other things. So it shouldn't.
You don't want it to linger for too long.
Exactly. So you can't eat anything else. So we want clean yet complicated and complex
flavors.
Okay, good.
I'm glad. And are we starting with the mildest? Sorry,
I will shut up. We are. Yep.
Okay, let's do that. Well, tell us about this
Blanche. It's a small little farm that makes fresh sheep's milk cheeses. This is one of my favorites. I saw the endive dish you made. This would be amazing on a piece of endive with a touch of honey, or on a crusty bread with a touch of honey. Or you can stuff peppers with it, like those piquillo peppers. Mm. So you can do all kinds of stuff with this.
Okay. And then to its right, you have?
Twig Farm Tome. Michael Lee, near Millsbury, Vermont. One way to use this cheese, it comes in a kind of a large cylinder, about 1.5 pounds. You can cut it kind of laterally in like inch thick slabs and put it in a ceramic dish into the oven, let it bubble up, and then kind of
dip into it. It's very nutty.
This is one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Again, do you see how clean the start is?
Yes, because it's also mild, but then it's got a full pow.
Exactly.
Do we have a bottle of wine here? Because
we should have. That's my fault. Next time.
Okay, so moving around the plate here.
And the next one, actually the next two, it's kind of like a great marriage in a fondue. So this is the Redding from Springbrook Farm. And then the next one to it is one of my favorite cheeses. It's Pleasant Ridge Extra Aged from Wisconsin, Dodgeville, Wisconsin. Andy Hatch is the cheesemaker. And this is one extremely talented young man.
Oh, yeah, that is exceptional.
So when I do a fondue, I would combine these two, rub the pot with garlic, and get a really nice, not expensive, but dry, minerally white, a simple white. It could be from Haute Savoie, it could be from Jura. Those are the ones I'm so used to using on fondues, but I'm sure we can find a really nice American wine too.
You know, once I was at a fondue place having fondue, and a little mouse came into the room. Seriously, and it's you have total audacity.
Were you in a Disney
mouse
movie?
No, that's what I thought. I thought, you know, this is the one time I'm in a restaurant, and I don't care that there's a mouse there because he belongs right here with the fondue. All right, moving right along.
That really sells
to the blue cheese.
The best part of the fondue for us, we don't really do any starch, cornstarch, or anything like that, and at the end, when it's getting towards the bottom, we crack a couple of really good eggs into it.
And Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
And fondue is something that people could make easily at home?
Very easily. Wow. I do the most simplest. Rub the pot with garlic, get the white wine simmering very gently, and add your cheese slowly as you stir. And I don't like that really thick, heavy stuff.
Yeah,
I like it slightly liquidy. So that it's more fun.
Sounds perfect. Sterling,
great thing to do in the middle of winter.
But don't forget the egg.
Oh, that sounds so
good. So we have a blue cheese here as well.
You have a beautiful blue. Hannah and Greg make this in Blue Ledge Farm, about 20 minutes away from Twig Farm. They have the most amazing farm. Beautiful goats.
But what state
is
that?
This one is cow's milk. This is Vermont
also.
So creamy.
And this is a really well-made cheese. It's refreshing. It's fruity. And you can... It's kind of a crowd pleaser. It's not something that's going to offend anyone.
It's not stinky.
Exactly.
And you left this for last because it's the strongest?
It's the blue mold that's going to definitely impact your palate. And you won't be able to taste the delicate taste of the Brebis Blanche, and it will even overpower the Twake Farm. So blues we always have at the end.
What do you think is the difference between a blue coming from France or a Gorgonzola coming from Italy, or, you know, some of the there are different blues in all these different countries?
Well, I think, again, we're talking about, you know, different elevations, different pastures, different animals. You know, a cheesemaker might be making this, you know, fifth generation, seventh generation. So all these factors.
Can you tell the difference when you taste a blue, where it's from?
Oh my God, yeah.
Really? It's interesting. I certainly wouldn't be able to.
We've been really having good time with American blues.
Yeah.
Do you suggest that people take these different cheeses and put them together in a cheese plate like we have here, or that you really focus on just one at a time?
It really depends on the occasion and the time of the year. What we have in front of us is kind of like an ideal plate. You have all the different textures. Mm. You've covered all the different milks. So this is going to please pretty much the whole crowd. But if I'm doing a party at home with people I know, I might pick one cheese that it's really good.
Your perfect cheese.
Exactly, at this time of the year.
So can you talk for a minute about winter cheese and how it's different than, say, spring cheese?
The winter cheeses, you know, were cold. We want bigger flavors. We want fattier things. We want intenser, higher solids. So we cover ourselves with cheeses that are not really... I mean, it's a heavier stature of the cheese. And in spring, all of a sudden, you start... The goat's milk comes in. The sheep's milk comes in. All these are kind of seasonal milks. They come in and it's pleasant. It's not as heavy. And they kind of bloom into the summer, and it works with the salad greens, the fruits, the vegetables. So you really want to balance things. I don't want to eat the cheeses I eat in wintertime and summertime. It's too much, too heavy. You don't make a fondue in the middle of the summer.
Speaking of the salad greens, we have an endive salad over here with some cheese on it.
So what's this,
Kathy? Yeah, okay.
So this, I thought, I want to make two very different dishes. This is a very simple salad. It's endive spears with a gorgonzola, so that's a blue cheese. It's very creamy. And I have toasted pecans and Marcona almonds and bits of pear and apple. So very refreshing
beautiful.
For a winter lunch or dinner, but also really satisfying. And I think a nice way to showcase the gorgonzola. I didn't get it from Formaggio, so it's probably not as good as you're used to.
I mean, look at how beautiful it looks.
Yeah, it's great.
It's
textures
delicious.
And a lot of the crunch from the nuts and the endive.
It's
and
so
the,
refreshing, too.
Yeah,
almost makes you forget that it's the middle of winter.
yeah.
And here you have a soup.
This is the real deal, baby. I made French onion soup. Oh. I roasted beef bones and made a real stock. And then I sautéed about 4 pounds of red and yellow onions from my garden and leeks from the garden and let them cook and cook and cook. And it has a splash of cognac.
It's very earthy.
Earthy, yes, exactly. And then I made a double-sided cheese croûte. So that has Gruyere and Parmesan on it.
Great.
And I just put some crusty bread under the broiler and sprinkle the cheese on, let it dry, then flip it, do it on the other side. So instead of that big, heavy blanket of cheese with all the bread, this is a somewhat lighter onion soup, but very hearty for good winter eating.
And something that wouldn't be too difficult for somebody to do at home?
Well,
the answer to that is no.
You know
it
what?
Would be
you
too
don't
hard.
Have,
don't even bother.
No, you don't have to make your own stock, though I will give you the recipe and urge you to. Mm. But you do have to take your time with those onions. You can't go too fast. But you know what? It's a main course soup.
You see the sweetness of the onions in here come right through. And I was just going to say,
tell me what cheese would you use?
Less of the extra reserve, the extra aged. But on the Redding, you can just go crazy with the Redding.
Next time.
Well, and we will put the names of all of these cheeses we've been talking about, as well as the recipes for what Kathy has brought us, at our website, hereandnow.org. Isan Gerdal from Formaggio Kitchen and Kathy Gunst, our resident chef, thanks to both of you for joining us.
It's a pleasure
thanks.
Being here.
Fun.
Thank you.